Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is BT and welcome to Inside the Episode. Today we're going inside episode 152, Everything is Spiritual. David, how are you doing?
Great. How are you, T?
I'm very well. So today, I say that all the time, I'm very well. I need to come up with a new tagline.
We need to just stop asking each other how we're
doing.
We
should. How are you doing? Yeah, we're good. They know this. You people know this. You don't even know.
If we weren't good, we wouldn't be.
No, we wouldn't be. Seriously. All right, moving on. In this episode, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I don't know how these questions are going to come out. We'll give them a run. You talked about how enlightenment removes duality of man. And you also said that we know the truth about everything. An understanding that good and bad are all encompassing. So that leads us to the bulk of this episode titled Everything is Spiritual. Can you explain again that dualistic nature that you referred to in the beginning of this episode and what that means?
Yeah. So, well, the idea is that we live in a physical dimension, and in the physical dimension, everything has an opposite, an up, down, in, out, top, bottom, and then we have the idea of right and wrong, good and bad, rich and poor. Like there's an opposite to everything. Nothing in the universe was created with just one side to it. But the human being has the ability to perceive different sides. So like we can perceive fractions, we can perceive halves, but nothing's created that way. So if we understand that we are when we claim something, like if you say, I'm broke, right? Well, that's not true. That's not actually true. That is your perception of one side of what you're experiencing right now. You might say, but listen to me, I don't have any money in my bank. You may not have any money in your bank, but there's money in the bank, right? The money is here. It's already attached to what you're doing. I know it sounds crazy for people to listen to this, right?
Right.
But here's the thing. Because they can't perceive the other side, they don't activate the other side and then realize in their reality that money, but it's already there. Like I show people how to do this all the time, and they turn their financial situation around instantaneously. So the truth is that everything is already here. The reason that the reason for the lesson is to kind of break down that, yes, I can see how everything has another side to it. But if we never really think about that, then we get stuck with the idea of here's a problem. I don't know what the solution is. And then we make decisions based from that place. But if you focus on the idea that there is another side to it, you will then become aware of it.
Yeah, just entertaining the idea is power in itself. I mean, the fact that when you're in a situation and things may look grim, stopping and taking pause and realizing, okay, this is my experience at the moment, but I know that this is also here as well, that helps move people towards breaking through it, and they're going to have to do it again and again and again.
Right.
I thought you just had to do it once. That was my foolish perception. But that's great. You also talked in the episode about energy and how it just is. You know, it's omnipresent, it's all around. And I loved how you talked about the cyclical and the rhythmical nature of life. And from a scientific viewpoint, it totally makes sense. Life is constantly moving in and out of form, which in essence you said is the perpetual law of transmutation, which you spoke about at length back in episode 100, Delay is the Deadliest Form of Denial. I encourage you to go back and listen to that for sure. How can we use the law of perpetual transmutation to help us understand spirituality?
Well, so the law of perpetual transmutation basically states that all energy is moving from a non-form to a form and then back to a non-form again. So like a great way to visualize this is water. You have water. When you see it in a puddle, it's in a form. As it heats up, it evaporates, turns into an air, ether, or gas, and then it's in a non-form. So it's in a non-physical form. It's in an evaporative form.
But it's still there.
It's a gas now.
Right.
But it's still there. As it gets cold, it condenses. As it condenses, it then moves back into form again. That condensation causes it to be affected by the law of gravity, and it gets pulled toward the center of the Earth when it gets heavy enough, right?
Sure.
But then it immediately starts the cycle all over again, right? So everything, all knowledge is energy moving into form on a consistent basis. But the form that it's moving into is determined by whatever the code is that tells it what to turn into. For, even for water, it's H2O, right? It's hydrogen and oxygen, right? Was it one part hydrogen, two parts oxygen? Now you have water. But if you take one part of the oxygen away, you don't have water anymore.
Correct.
Right? So there's it is a code that actually creates everything. We have genes inside of us. There's genes inside of an acorn. There's genes inside of a salmon. It tells that energy to be a salmon or an acorn. It's all the same energy. So if we're going to use it, we understand this. One of the forms that it's taking as it moves through us is not just our body, but the images that we have in our mind. We have a mental faculty called imagination. Imagination is our ability to take something that's not here and build an image of it in our mind. We use our will, which is our ability to focus, to hold that image. So it's just like we're taking a picture, but we're holding it in our mind. We see the image of what it is that we desire, right? And then we can take other forms or actions in life to make that picture a reality. That is moving something from non-form into a form again. Sure. That is the act of creation, right? When two human beings have intercourse and a sperm hits an egg, right? The sperm and the egg are both – they both contain information. That information, what it does is it takes the energy that's passing through the mother because mom is holding on to the embryo, and it tells that energy what to turn into. So as it passes through the mother, it takes that energy and it tells it exactly what to turn into, and it starts to form the pattern of a little person.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
At first, it's turning into the form of a little girl. But then if it has the other chromosome, it turns into a boy. But it all starts out, right, in its morphology, it starts off as a girl. But then when the other chromosome kicks in, it changes it and says, nope, make a penis, not a vagina.
Right.
Right? But it wasn't there. It wasn't there. The food that the mother is eating is energy. The water the mother is eating is energy. The emotional state that she in is energy. And that part of her body is telling that energy to turn into a little baby boy or a little baby girl. She also has energy in her body that's having cells reproduce by the billions every minute or whatever it is. So there's all these different mechanisms going on inside of us, and our imagination is one where we can consciously engage the information that's in the universe, and anything that we can see in our mind, we can create in our physical world. Because the idea that we're actually seeing in our mind is taking chaos in the universe and giving it order. All physical forms are a form of order. The information is in a chaotic state. But as it flows into something that can give it order, it becomes that order, and then you have the physical thing. And human beings can do that consciously.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. It's what helps, like looking around the studio, all these things that are here was because of those things you just said. It's all energy, and someone was able to frame it in their mind and build these things. At a moment the other day when I was sitting there getting my email off my phone, and I think, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't even have email.
Right.
Right. Now, all of a sudden, I can just pick up this electronic brick and I have everything at my disposal. It just blows my mind when you think about all those sorts of things and that it came from somebody's head. But it was here all along, like all those things. And we talked about this a lot, but all those things were here. It's very, I don't know, inception shit, I guess, is what I'm at. So, and that brings me to this next question. You know, the human being... Is the human being life in and of itself, or did life exist prior to that? That was the question that you asked or posed in this particular episode. And you talked about how we are a vessel that carries us through various life experiences. And then I love what you said. We don't have a soul. We are a soul. Can you explain again how we have our own experience when it seems that we're sharing those experiences with those around us?
Yeah. So we have five senses. Those five senses are constantly taking in information that is around us. Our brain is then perceiving that information. But what information it's actually taking in and recognizing is determined by what it is that we're focused on. We can't focus on everything that's happening in this room at the same time. There's a billion things happening in this room at the same time. But we're focused on a couple things. That's all we're focused on. The meaning that we give to those things is stored in our belief system. Our belief system is saying, what do we give meaning? Like I used this before, right? The remote control. We know what this means because we gave meaning to it. That's how it got here. Somebody created this out of a meaning. So I know what this is. I know what the meaning of it is. And if I look at it, I can see what all the little buttons tell me to do because I understand all the little individual meanings, right? So when I'm doing that, I am focused in on that specific meaning and that specific causation of whatever that is. And I'm attempting to either get or do whatever it is that I'm focused on. But at the same time, you're doing the same thing, but with different things, right? And Will's doing the same thing with different things. All of it's happening at the same time, but I'm only having the experience that I'm having, right? And here's the other thing. So there's a button, there's number 3 on here. The way that I feel this button and look at it and see it may be very different than the way you do. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's all based on how our brain is wired to perceive something. And you say, well, that wasn't my experience. This is how I perceived it. This is how I experienced it. And somebody says, well, that's not how I experienced it. I perceived, but it's all based on that person's belief system.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it true. It makes it your reality. The truth is everything about it that's happening at the same time. But you only perceive it based on what you believe about it at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm going to share an experience with you that I had just like yesterday. And it involved watching a limited series on Netflix that just dropped last week. So there's this series called Unbelievable. And if it's basically about a young woman who's accused of about lying about a rape, and then two female detectives are like investigating similar attacks in a different state. And it's got like these crazy time jumps and stuff like that. And it, you know, the girl, this actually happened to the girl. These are based off of true events. So we're watching that show, and my perception or my filter was so much different than Steph sitting right next to me, right? So I'm sitting there, I only see what I perceive as blatant male bashing and making the men in the series less than because it's about rape and men are rapists. They're dressing down the men as far as insubordinate, making them feel like shit. These are just going through my head as I'm watching it to the point where I'm very triggered by it. And then I have a conversation with Steph. She felt none of that. And I had to take a moment and take a step back and think about, you know, it's clear to me that the state of today, like being a male was wrong because of all the things with Me Too and the horrible things that have gone on for generations. Like being a white male, I've got all these things running through my head. Right. I can't turn on the TV. I can't listen to the radio or a podcast without somebody talking about that. And it makes me feel less. It's very interesting that I took that experience of, you know, my belief system around these things and projected it into what was happening in the show. Long story short, Steph had a completely different experience than I did. So it's fascinating to me how we take things in through our own filter. Even though we're all having our own experience, we are biased by all these different things that are coming at us. And I just thought when you were talking about that in the episode, it really hit me like we are having a shared experience, but how I perceive to look at things is very much different. How you would, or how Will would, or how Steph would, or how anybody else would. You'll probably watch that show and be like, I didn't see any of that, because I have this feeling you're a little bit more evolved than I am in that department. I'm sitting there thinking, God, this is rough for me. Like, I was not having a good time. Great series, totally different when I was watching it with her.
So think about it this way. So you're having this experience, you're triggered by some things that are happening, right?
Right.
Steph's having a completely different experience, and both of your experiences are completely based on something that's not true. They're actors who are expressing a script. They're pretending.
Right.
It's not even real, and you're triggered by it, right?
Yeah.
So that's such a good metaphor, because most of life is that way. We perceive something is real and we get triggered by it. It's representational of something that we already believe that is touching a sensitive part inside of ourselves.
Yeah, it's true. Like I think about villains on television.
Yeah.
Like it's funny because let's take Walter White. My favorite series of all time is Breaking Bad. I absolutely love it. I watch it every year, cover to cover. I can't get enough of it. Steph watched most of that with me and dropped off because she just couldn't stand how this man who went in with all the right intentions just basically falls into this corrupt, mean, horrible human being.
Yeah.
She sees him as a villain. I see him as a freaking hero of heroes, right? But we're sitting there and you feel that. She feels a certain way when she sees him. I feel a certain way when Joffrey Baratheon from freaking Game of Thrones comes on, right? You see these and you...
Yeah.
I actually had to take a moment when I was rewatching some of those shows and be like, dude, that's an actor playing a role. You don't have to hate him. Like if I saw this kid on the street, I'd want to choke him out, right? But at the same time, it's like, that is so fascinating that we as humans attach meaning to these people who are entertaining us and we loathe them. Like we get angry about it and it's for our entertainment.
Right.
So it's just fascinating to me, this whole conversation that we had about, you know, spirituality and how we look at different things and how we take things through our filter. It just blows my mind.
The thing is that when we find ourselves being triggered by something, if we ask ourselves a different question, if we stop hating the trigger and we start asking, what is it that it's touching in me that it causes me to experience anger or sadness or rage or happiness or fantasy or whatever it is that your internal experience is, you can trace it back to something else in your life where you had an experience that it caused that, and that's lodged in that center of your brain. And yeah. Then here's something that resembles that. So through our senses, we're looking for things that resemble our belief system about our world. And then that reaction is how we feel safe and certain when we experience that thing, whatever that thing might be.
Yeah, and I think for me, the problem I face is I judge the fact that I don't catch those quickly enough, and I've already thought the thought, and then I just ruminate over the fact that I thought this horrible thing or I pulled back this memory. But even the awareness of that is power in itself. Like even being aware, like let's say, so I've shortened the refractory period here. It used to be like 3 or 4 or 5 days when something had happened and I would just stew over it. Now I'm down to about maybe 3 or 4 hours, right? Yeah. So it's gotten a lot better, but even that isn't good enough for me. So thinking about what you just said, I think it's important for you to, you know, I like that. Just take a pause. And like Steph always told me, and I know she got this from you, like, what is the truth in this? Like do a little bit of self-inquiry and be like, what is the trigger for me now? And when you trace it back through, you know, an exercise of some sorts, you do realize that was given to you probably at a young age, probably by mom or dad.
Right.
And you're just recreating it over and over and over again. But the fact that you know about it, that's the first step. Now correcting it's going to require a little bit more work.
Yeah.
But I love that.
I think one of the things that's really fascinating about your analogy is that how easy our brain is hijacked by something that's not true.
It's like instant.
Right. So, you know, movies and TV and stuff, they'll cause you to cry. They'll cause you to be turned on. They'll cause you to be angry. They'll cause you to be defensive and judgmental. Like all these different ranges of experience that you viscerally feel in your body. And the whole thing is just an act. It's not even real. Even if it's representing something that was real at some point, it's just an act. They're actors, but your brain gets completely hijacked by it. We have to ask ourselves the question, how much of life is hijacking our brain in the same way and manipulating us to be, do, and have things that we don't really want to be, do, and have?
Sure.
Instead of us being in control of in creating our own world.
Well, I'll tell you what, even in that unbelievable limited series, I was taking what was happening on the screen and I was acting as if it was happening in my own life, and it was bleeding over into like – anger and frustration towards Steph, who's just sitting there enjoying the show.
Why doesn't she see it like I do?
Right. Yeah. So then it was about me being wrong, but at least I was transparent enough to say, look, I was triggered by this and I need some help working through this. And we have that agreement where we can do that. But it was like, I was starting to feel resentment towards her and it had nothing to do with her. It blew my mind. I could sit here. I don't watch that much TV, but I watch a fair share amount. Yeah. So the people out there are probably thinking, God, that's all this guy does. But no, I feel like that was a good analogy and it kind of brings us to, you know, what it is that we're talking about here. So back to the pod. You said that a thought that is out of harmony, you talked about a thought that is out of harmony with life.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that again? Just to reiterate that to the audience.
So the modus operandi of the universe or God or energy or whatever it is more life. Everything is constantly moving, creating and expressing life. If we start thinking about things that are not in harmony with that idea, we're immediately in harmony with the idea of disrupting life, so to speak. So that means that it moves down to something that can sustain life and expression into a base form in which life can regrow from it. So it's the whole idea of like leaves falling to the ground and decaying, and then it becomes part of the soil and it regrows something else. The leaves get to a place because the environment changed where they can no longer sustain life. It's too cold, not enough light, you know, too much rain or not enough rain or whatever, and they fall off. That tree's form of expression has died out at the moment. It's actually gone dormant because its environment changed. So what's interesting about the tree is it learned how to adapt to a changing environment and still survive, right?
Right.
It's like everything gets pulled in and it stays dormant until it has enough light and it has enough rain and it has enough sunshine in order for it to come back and really be expressive again for what it is. Human beings can change their environment, but when they don't, when they stay in an environment which they can't thrive, they become like the dead tree or the dormant tree.
Right.
And eventually it'll kill them because if it goes into a state of not healthy expression, it's in an unhealthy expression. And then that's where disease forms, mental psychosis of all kinds begins to form, actions that do not benefit us but actually, you know, contribute to death, disease, mistakes, poverty, you know, whatever, broken relationships, like all that stuff. And then it continues on a downward cycle, and if it's not corrected, it will completely destroy the person. It'll completely destroy us as a species if we don't wake up to it.
Sure. Yeah. And it's, you know, dormancy is probably a problem that a lot of people face. You know, they're afraid, you know, they probably got a lot of fear. They figure they'll just recoil and stay doing the same thing. But if you continue to do the thing you're doing, you're going to continue to get the same results. And there's a lot of people who aren't very happy with their results.
I can't get off this analogy that you brought in with the TV show. A person's life in society is like a million TV shows bombarding their consciousness at the same time. It makes people so uncertain that they lock in onto some wrong that was done to them or someone else, and they begin to latch on to how that must change, because even if they could just hold on to one thing, it gives them a sense of certainty. But it's not doing any good, because then it becomes tyrannical in its expression. And then it's like, I need everybody else on this fucking planet to think my way so that I can stop being afraid. But fear's not even the problem. You're holding on to the only thing that you can resonate with for certainty. That's it. There's no basis of truth in it whatsoever. It is a reality that is happening. It is not the totality of your reality, but you're choosing to hold on to it because everything else that's happening at the same time is too chaotic and you can't find certainty.
Right. It reminds me of when we recorded the Tiger Divide after Tiger won the Masters last year. And
yeah,
we recorded that episode and we talked at length about the redemption arc and what Tiger had done to get his body right and put all the past behind him. And we got like blitzed by people who were so upset that we would give time to a, you know, a philanderer, you know, all these things that he had done a long, long time ago. And now here we were celebrating the achievement, and it was a great achievement. And we had people who were so pissed off because once a cheater, always a cheater. And that in itself was just a ridiculous statement. So it's very similar to what you just said. We hold on to that one thing because of many different reasons, but even no matter if you do 100 great things, if you do that one shitty thing, you are a horrible person.
And here's the thing. What if the guy's a cheater for his rest of his life? What the fuck does that have to do with you?
Yeah, 100%.
What does it have to do with you? It is, you don't know him. He's not in your life. He's not cheating. What? Why do you have to get so emotionally involved in the way he's choosing to live his life? It's his choice.
It's true.
It's between him and whoever he's cheating on and whoever he's cheating with. It has nothing to do with you. It's not one bit of your fucking business to do that. But you will waste precious time in your life to get attached to what somebody else is doing that you perceive wrong, right? And that becomes the totality of your thinking.
Right.
And you're doing it not because he's wrong, not because he's right, not because you think he's wrong, because it gives you a feeling of certainty to be able to hold on to that problem because you can't hold on to anything else in your life because you feel so uncertain.
Yeah, it's like, you know, get comfortable being uncomfortable. I'm now adopting the new mantra, get certain with things being uncertain. Because I think in that regard, I think it's good that you know that there's no certainty.
Absolutely. There is no certainty.
Love that.
There's no certainty and there's no safety. And the sooner that you realize that, the sooner that you understand that the certainty that you would feel as a person is to be certain that you can deal with whatever shows up in your life. Yeah. That is the basis of sound psychology right there.
For sure.
Right? That's where, if there's any certainty at all, it's that we have the ability to think, that we have the ability to reason, that we have the ability to adapt and move through problems as they show up in our life. That's it. Trying to keep everything the same way or glomming onto what's wrong in life is, I mean, it does absolutely, life. No, it just increases the problem. Right. Anything that you focus on grows.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that's all that life can do is continue to grow the thing.
For sure.
So you stay locked into something that's wrong. You continue to grow what's wrong.
And you as a human have a conscious choice to change that immediately. You could change the way you think right now if you wanted to, but most people hold on to that till their dying day. And then they look back probably with a lot of resentment being like, why didn't I just let that go back in 68? I would have been a whole lot better for it moving forward.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. And just to kind of wind this down, in the episode you talked about the length of a lot of people believe or perceive that the length of life is more precious than the quality of life. And you brought in the transformation you've gone through this year. And we're going to get into that more in depth on a future podcast. But I wanted to, it triggered a memory in my mind about my wonderful Aunt Judy, who suffered with severe back pain, similar to what you did for most of her adult life. I mean, she looked like a question mark, like you said in the episode. She would walk very, very painful. You could just tell. She managed it, but it wasn't much of a life. Then, not too long ago, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So in that moment, she had the choice to either go through the chemo to lengthen her life by several months, or she could just opt out. She could leave the hospital and she could live out her life on her time and her terms. She obviously chose the latter, which I was grateful for. She got a beach house. She invited, you know, her husband was there, her kids were there, her grandchildren were there, and they spent this glorious time out there. And it got me thinking about choosing quality over quantity. And I think that's such a beautiful thing. And I'm glad you brought it up because I think a lot of people are all about the longevity. But if you're not living a life right now, why would you want to continue living that life if it's not your best life?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's so many people out there that are probably doing that.
Well, part of the idea is fear. They're afraid of the unknown. Nobody's really afraid of death. Just about anybody that has experienced a near-death experience will tell you that at the moment where they thought they were going to die, they experienced peace. I've heard that from every person I've ever had a conversation with that has had a near-death experience. They'll also tell you that before they were afraid and sometimes after they were afraid. But at the moment, of where they actually thought they were going to die, an unbelievable peace came over them. It's a really interesting experience. And I think it's part of how like if all we did was sit around and think about the ultimate demise, because that's the end for everybody is death, right? We're all headed towards that destination. Doesn't matter how much money you have or how good looking you are or how talented you are. We're all headed towards that destination. If that is in fact, the actual thing, but we're focused on it, we live in complete anxiety, right? If we think about it's going to happen and just let it be as it'll happen when it's supposed to happen, I don't really have much control over that, then we focus on what we can control now, which is what your aunt did. And she decided to make it a joyful time instead of trying to glam onto another month or two and be completely miserable, full of all kinds of cancer drugs that didn't have the ability to help her, you know. Right. That's what I think.
Yeah, I love that. This is a great episode. And I was a little hesitant at first because, you know, anytime you bring spirituality into things, even though everything is spiritual, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they have a perception of what spirituality means. Maybe it's woo-woo, maybe it's this, that, or the other. But I'm glad you decided to talk about this because everything is spiritual.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of benefit from this episode.
Cool. So, sounds good.
Yeah, thanks for coming inside, David.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.